Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karmateksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's Dharma Talk is entitled Goodwill Toward All by Lama Kathy Wesley. The winter holidays are fast approaching, and as Buddhists, we may wonder how to relate to holidays from traditions other than our own. The answer is simple and might surprise you. Taking hold of the Buddhist principle of goodwill toward all can help us build a bridge with our brothers and sisters from Abrahamic faiths. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karmateksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Well, good morning. This is Lama Kathy Wesley on behalf of the Columbus Karmateksum Choling Tibetan Buddhist Meditation Center with our Sunday morning Dharma Talk. I hope everyone had a good holiday, and I am looking forward to seeing some of you on Zoom when we have our next holiday celebrations, which will be on Christmas Day. Those of you who are familiar with the Columbus KTC know that even though we are a Buddhist center, many of us would like to pray on Christmas Day, as it was the birthday of a great Bodhisattva. So we'll be doing morning prayers on Christmas Day. Can't remember if we're starting at 9 or at 10, so you can watch the Columbus KTC newsletter for information. So I'll start today by telling you that our topic today is called Goodwill Toward All. And I figured that since December is often considered to be a holiday period of goodwill, in which everyone, I tell my husband, I say everyone acts like a Buddhist at Christmas time. So it's a really ideal situation. And wanted to say a few words about goodwill and what it means in Buddhism. So let's see. Let's start with a Buddhist prayer. We'll start with the prayer of taking refuge, so that all of our activities of this talk and surrounding this talk are taking a step by step toward Buddhahood. I'll recite the short prayer in English. In the Buddha, his teaching, and the order most excellent, we take refuge until enlightenment is reached. By the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may we attain Buddhahood for the sake of all that lives. In the Buddha, his teaching, and the order most excellent, we take refuge until enlightenment is reached. By merit of generosity and other good deeds, may we attain Buddhahood for the sake of all sentient beings. In the Buddha, his teaching, and the order most excellent, we take refuge until enlightenment is reached. By merit of generosity and other good deeds, may we attain Buddhahood for the sake of all that lives. Now I'll recite just a short prayer of my own. Oh, Palden Sawai Lama Rinpoche, Dagi Chi Wur Pede Den Shula, Kadrin Jimbogun Ni Che Sunte, Kusum Tukin Udrup Sao Du So. Kind root guru, seated on a lotus and moon seat above my head, I pray to you for the blessing of your body, speech, and mind. Okay, thanks everyone. And I see folks on the various social media are saying good morning. So hello to all of you, and I'm so glad you could join us today. And if any of you are watching on YouTube and have the opportunity to send a chat message to say good morning, that would be awesome also, because that way we know that the YouTube link is working. I'd like to begin today with just a short, like 1 minute meditation in silence. And I think that at the beginning of our week, that it's often difficult. Thanks very much. Thanks for saying hi from YouTube. I'd like to start with just a short period of meditation so that we can settle our mind at the beginning of the week, and then we can talk a little bit about goodwill and what it means in the Buddhist tradition. This will only be about a minute meditation, thinking that we dedicate ourselves to meditation for the benefit of sentient beings. We begin by placing our body in the posture of meditation, forming our intention to meditate for the benefit of all. And then beginning with one deep breath, breathing out, and then allowing the breath to come and go naturally for, we'll do a count of 21 breaths in and out. Okay, that closes our short period of morning meditation. So the topic today has to do with one of the basics of Buddhism, which is that our experience of this entire world happens inside our minds. And I think that for many of us, because our bodies convey so much information, the temperature, the relative humidity, comfort, discomfort, illness and wellness, and so on. Because our bodies are so powerfully connected to our minds that often when we aren't feeling well, it's very hard to work with our minds. But by the same token, the Buddha in his teaching did say that we are what we think. All that we are arises with our thoughts, and with our thoughts, we make the world. So because of this, the Buddha taught the path out of suffering toward happiness and then toward awakening. We call these the Four Noble Truths. Suffering's part of life, the Buddha said. Suffering has a cause. And he said the cause of suffering is clinging and fixation. Because suffering has a cause, it has a solution, which is letting go of clinging and fixation. And then finally, there is a path that leads us to the letting go of clinging and fixation. And that path has eight parts, the Eightfold Noble Path, but I like to brief them down by saying the four statements: do no harm, practice virtue, and tame your mind. This is the teaching of the Buddha. So since that last one is just a summary, that leaves us with doing no harm, practicing virtue, and taming the mind. Doing no harm means to not harm yourself and not harm others. Doing virtuous things means to take care of yourself and to benefit others. And tame the mind means to meditate. Because without the practice of meditation, how are we going to know fully what is beneficial and what is harmful? So for many of us, meditation is the key to recognizing that our experience happens within ourselves and that we can have an impact on that experience. Everyone who's tried to do the discipline of meditation knows how this works. You're sitting in meditation, you're observing the breath, and a very ugly thought arises. Maybe it's an ugly thought about what someone said to you that you felt was unfair, or maybe it's something that you're longing for and really want or miss very badly. So this big ugly thought is coming up. And you have a choice at that moment, even though we may not think we have a choice in that moment, we actually have a choice in that moment. And the choice is to pay attention to the big, ugly, hairy thought, or to let go of that thought. The discipline of meditation teaches us to be have equanimity toward our thoughts, not thinking some are good and not thinking some are bad, but merely letting go of all of them. By letting go of all of our thoughts, whether they're good, bad, or in between, by letting go of all of the thoughts, when we let go of a thought, it actually, in many cases, disappears unless it has a lot of habit energy behind it. But that's a talk for later. But the idea is that if we let go of a thought, gradually it will disappear. And then we will reestablish the thread of following the breath and the practice of meditation. So what that moment, that ugly, hairy thought, and looking at it and letting it go and sending it away, that moment of looking at that thought and letting it go is a decision point for us. We can make the decision, do I want to continue thinking this thought or do I want to let that thought go? And when we make the decision to let the thought go, what happens? What happens? Our mind returns to a pacified state, kind of a Pacific state. Remember the Pacific Ocean. The idea is that the peaceful ocean, it returns to that. And so in that way, it's both good news and bad news that our peace of mind is somewhat under our control. Now, this is not always the case, because often we're in relationships with people who are quite difficult and who, I guess, as one of my friends used to say, they get on our nerves, or as she used to say, they get on my last raw nerve. So there will be some folks that we have difficulty with, and even just being in their presence makes us feel uncomfortable. It's a little bit difficult to tame our minds in the presence of this person. So that situation is always going to be there. But let's talk about general situations that are much easier situations, situations in which we're mildly irritated about something. If we are cultivating a presence of mind, we'll begin to recognize not just that thing that we're mad about or not just that thing that we wish weren't the way it was, but we'll actually also notice how we're thinking about it. The story that we're building in our mind about that thing, like that person always treats me bad. They're my enemy. I need to get even with them, or I need to neutralize that enemy. Whatever story we make up in our mind about what's going on, we're usually the main character in this story. And so this goes all the way back to the Buddha's initial teaching of do no harm, practice virtue, tame your mind. Because if you do these three things, you will actually recognize that the greatest clinging of them all, the greatest clinging that causes the greatest suffering for us all, is our self-clinging. You know, recently someone reminded me of one of the 12-step slogans. Is it better to be happy or is it better to be right? And this is behind so much of the argumentativeness that we see in modern society. Folks really want to be right, and they really want to feel like they're in control. So they end up fighting with even people they love in order to establish their own supremacy, the supremacy of their ideas. So how do we work with this mind that has so many habits of self-clinging? How do we work with this mind that kind of wants to mess up our peace of mind? How do we do that? And the Buddha gave these three teachings about doing no harm, practicing virtue, and taming the mind. So taming the mind, we've talked about just a little bit, but I want to talk next about the doing no harm and the practicing of virtue. Doing no harm is a method that the Buddha taught to his earliest disciples. His earliest disciples, being Hindu, really understood the necessity of having good moral behavior, because it was thought that the karma, action, cause, and result, the actions that they do, think, and say brought about a result of negative action brings to us suffering, positive action brings happiness. And then, of course, meditation can help us to undo all of the negativity that we possess and bring about a lasting state of happiness, which in Buddhism we call Buddhahood. So the Buddha knew that his audience was already, I guess you could say, preloaded with the idea of acting virtuously and refraining from non-virtue. But he went on to talk about this in the first chapter of his collected sayings, the Dhammapada, after telling us we are what we think, all that we are arises with our thoughts, and with our thoughts we make the world. He then gave an example of a person who is holding a grudge. The quote goes like this: "Look how this person beat me and abused me. Look how this person threw me down, and how this person robbed me." And then he says, "Live with such thoughts and you live in hate." It's a powerful thing to say, hate. Live with these thoughts and you live in hate. And then he repeats the statement, we are what we think, all that we are arises with our thoughts, and with our thoughts we make the world. And then he gives a different script to the person who was building that grudge. "Look how this person beat me and abused me. Look how this person threw me down and robbed me." And then the Buddha advises, abandon such thoughts and live in love. Hate never once dispelled hate. Only love dispels hate. This is the law, ancient and inexhaustible. And then this verse ends by saying, you too shall pass away. And knowing this, how can you quarrel? I do think about this sometimes. I do think about this sometimes. Sometimes when somebody's getting on my last raw nerve, I think, you know, they're going to be gone someday. And it's going to be a painful thing for them. And in some ways, it's going to be painful for me too. So even those people who irritate us and challenge us and provoke us, they're living beings too, and they're suffering too. So thinking about their suffering sometimes helps. For me, to let go of my story. I'm the hero of my story, and I must vanquish this opponent. Any means necessary, and so on. But doing that just riles up my own peace of mind and doesn't allow me the opportunity to become who I want to be. So anyway, enough about that for a moment. But the Buddha then, in his Dhammapada, establishes the line that differentiates impure mind and pure mind. The impure mind is the selfish mind, the mind that is only acting in its own interest. The pure mind is the mind that is free from selfishness, the mind that is working to benefit others. And after that, after establishing what leads to suffering, which is negative action or impure mind, and establishing what brings about happiness, which is the pure mind, he then went on to teach more and more and more. And eventually his teachings were systematized into what became known as the 10 virtuous actions and the 10 non-virtuous actions. And I'm going to use this, my text today, the Torch of Certainty, which was written by Jamgon Kanpo the Great. Let's see, I'm going to guess not quite 100 years ago. He lived in the 1800s and he died in the early 1900s. But he wrote what amounts to us to be 5 encyclopedias of Buddhist teachings that were all the compilation of knowledge from his day. And so he, as part of this, talked about the actions that lead to samsara as well as the actions that lead to happiness. Samsara, by the way, is the Buddhist terminology for this wheel of cyclic existence that we're on, and that is driven by our selfish fixation and is unmade. This wheel of suffering is unmade when we arrive at Buddhahood. So here's what Jamgon Kondral had to say about the 10 unwholesome actions. And in a moment, you're going to hear a little bit about what makes them that way. I'm just going to read directly from the book. As my teacher, Kempo Karthurimbache, used to say, if you rely on Jamgon Kondral, you can't make a mistake. I mean, maybe I'll forget something, or maybe I'll say something improper, but Jamgon Kantro, he gets it right every time. The Tenem's wholesome actions are 3 of body, 4 of speech, and 3 of mind. The 3 actions of body: do not consciously take the life of any living being, even an ant, for when it comes to life, there's no big or small. 2, do not secretly take another's property when it hasn't been given to you. 3, do not indulge in sex with inappropriate partners at inappropriate times and in inappropriate ways. 4, this will be the first of the negative actions of speech. Do not consciously lie. That is, don't say what is untrue. Don't slander. That is, say things that will promote discord. 6, do not speak ill of others. That is, call people names. 7, don't engage in idle chatter or a frivolous speech. He said these are the 4 unwholesome verbal acts. The 3 of mind: do not covet someone else's money, reputation, so forth, thinking, oh, if only I had that. Do not resent others. That is, don't be displeased by their happiness or good fortune. Do not hold perverted views, that is, doubting the existence of action, cause, and result, the special qualities of the awakened ones, and so on. So if we can do our best to avoid these 10 negative actions, this will be very helpful, because I remember what Kempo Kartha Rinpoche said to me. He said, sometimes a small unwholesome action may seem like not much, and that, you know, no one's going to notice. But he said, there's no big bureaucracy of karma keeping track of all of our thoughts, words, and actions. He said, but our mind keeps track of all of our thoughts, words, and actions. And it is our mind in which the karmic result ripens. So he said, do your best to not accumulate negative karma, and then furthermore, practice confession practice, such as reciting the 7 branch prayer and so on, with the mind of wishing to release and relinquish one's selfishness by relying on the Buddha, regretting the wrong, remedying the situation by doing prayer and counteracting virtue, and finally resolving not to repeat the negative action. Rinpoche said, our negative karma was placed by us, and therefore we can remove it. And so he encouraged us to always look at our negative actions, regret them, and confess them to the Buddhas, and ask for the Buddhas to grant us purification, meaning we accomplish virtue as a means of counteracting our negativity. As Rinpoche once said, the only good thing about bad karma is that it can be purified. So in any case, these negative actions all stem from selfishness. And so because these negative acts stem from selfishness, we're encouraged to give that up. And if you look at the 10 wholesome actions, then you can actually find the opposites of these. Instead of killing, the first wholesome action is to save lives. Instead of stealing, distribute your own food, and so on. Preserve moral conduct, whether anyone is watching or not. Speak truthfully. Patch up quarrels caused by divisive speech. Use gentle words. Discuss worthwhile topics. Rejoice in the good fortune of others. Think only of their benefit. And when you hear the views of another school, do not denounce them, but simply maintain your faith in the Buddha's words. He says, he said, do your best to carry these out, and bid others to do the same. Rejoice at those which have already been done. That's something that you can do every day. Instead of just regretting the negative things we've done, we can also rejoice in the positive things we've done. Now, these are the ways that we can actually gradually begin to bring bring more peace of mind into our lives. And so you might say, well, what does this have to do with goodwill? Well, the reason I wanted to bring this up and bring up the 10 wholesome actions as well as the 10 unwholesome actions is because if our experience is happening in our mind, and if working with our mind is working with our experience, then there's something that we can do to actually improve all of these things, and that is generate a mind of goodwill. Recently, I've been teaching the 7-point mind training, the copy of the book by Trungpa Rinpoche, to a group of students. And it's really been a great read. It's very, very good to read anything about the 7-point mind training. But Trungpa Rinpoche's books are very pragmatic and very practical in how they apply the great practices of exchanging oneself for others that come from the Mahayana Buddhist tradition. But principle among all of these mind training practices, Trungpa Rinpoche said, was the practice of generating a mind of goodwill. His thought was, if we can generate within ourselves the mind that wants to benefit others, if we can think, even if I can't help somebody, may I at least not harm them? And even if I can't help them now, may I help them in the future? This is better for us than thinking badly of ourselves because we are somehow not capable, or thinking badly of others, thinking, oh, if it weren't for that person, I'd have a perfect practice of Dharma. Or if it weren't for this situation, everything would be good for me. So what we can do, according to the teachings, is generate this heart of love. And if one of the unwholesome actions is holding ill will against others, because I know he uses different words in The Torch of Certainty, but in Trungpa Rinpoche's commentary, he calls it ill will. If we hold ill will against anyone, then this ill will is going to flavor and color every aspect of our relationship with that person. And so what can we do about this? The idea that is floated in the Buddha's teachings on mind training is that we can replace ill will with goodwill. Kempo Kartha Rinpoche was giving a teaching on Trungpa Rinpoche's 7-point mind training commentary. And he said, we should not underestimate the power of the simple wish to be of benefit to everyone we meet, even people we don't really think we can help. If we at least hold a mind of goodwill toward that person, even if we can't actually help them. He said, it starts, he actually used this phrase, a momentum of goodness within us. And this bearing this wish to be of benefit to everyone we meet, bearing this wish actually helps us to refrain from the 10 unwholesome actions. If we're holding a mind of goodwill toward others, how could we kill? How could we steal? How could we lie? How could we abuse someone with speech? How could we divisively speak, trying to split groups of people apart? How could we do any of the negative actions? And so what we can do is that even if we don't know how to refrain necessarily from our worst negative habits, if in the time we're not engaged in those habits, if we could practice regret for them, the negative actions, and increase our wish to be of benefit to others, this could be incredibly valuable. So one of the things that Rinpoche said was, when we do a positive action, it creates momentum. And when we do a negative action, it creates momentum. And that this is why we are asked to recount at the end of each day why we are asked to go over our day and to think about our day. This story is often told of the great masters of the Kadampa tradition who had two bowls in front of them on their shrine, on their practice table every day, and they would put a stone in one or the other, negative actions in one bowl, positive actions in another bowl, and at the end of the day, they would count the stones and see how they had done. And they would rejoice in the good things that they had done and would regret the negative things they had done. So being willing to look at ourselves with honesty, this is just incredible. Being able to honestly approach ourselves and to take responsibility for who we are in any given moment. This is a powerful thing. Because what Kempo Rinpoche said in that lecture when he was teaching about Trungpa Rinpoche's commentary on the 7-point mind training was he said that wish of goodwill toward others, he said, will start a momentum of goodness within us that he said eventually will become self-sustaining. There is power in one little good thing. You might think, oh, well, it's just one little good thing and it's not going to stack up against other things. But even that one little good thing, he said, was actually part of what can lead us into better and better actions, better and better experiences, and so on. And if a person has worked very hard on this wish to be of benefit to every person, then they actually will feel more happiness. They'll actually feel more happiness, even if things aren't going well, because they will have formed inside themselves this momentum of goodness. And this momentum of goodness will become self-sustaining. And it will, I think, it's just such a powerful thing. It's just such a powerful thing. And I'm just so incredibly pleased that I have had this opportunity to talk with all of you about this and just tell you that no small good thought is going to be lost. No small good thought is going to go to waste, because it actually changes us from the inside. And the power of that one thought that we can do, that one thought actually can begin to change us from the inside. And I remember talking to Kempo Carter Rinpoche near the end of his life. And I don't exactly know how it came about. I think it could have been because we were talking about the difficulties of the Columbus KTC. Our building burned down in 2016, and we had to work so hard to come up with a plan to replace the building and then raise the money to replace the building and so on. And it was just, it was not an easy time in many ways. And I don't know why he said this, but sort of out of the blue one day, he said, I am now past my 90th year. And he said, and I have never lost my enthusiasm for serving His Holiness Karmapa and sentient beings. And that really touched me, because I felt that he was that person that he spoke about. He was that person who had held that mind of wishing to benefit others and held it and held it and held it for so long that it became a momentum of goodness within him that just became self-sustaining, that this actually happened for him and that he was actually the person that he was speaking about. And he was hoping that through this example that all of us would be inspired to follow that. And so I just want everyone to know that that none of our good thoughts are wasted, because they can be part of that momentum of goodness. Drop by drop, the water fills the glass. And to do one's best to notice negative mental afflictions when they're arising, notice when we're starting to work on a grudge, admit our grudges, and to do our best to let them go. And sometimes the only way to let go of a grudge is to disassociate ourselves from the people that we just can't stop being mad at. I remember one time Kemper Rinpoche talked about this. He said, well, he said, we all have trouble from time to time. He says, when groups of people get together, he says, it's like boxes. It's like dishes in a box. You pack your dishes in a box. And when you pick them up, they go clink, 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 clink. He said, but it's really important to try to maintain harmony and goodness among people if you can. And so we all try our best to do that. But the power remains in our own hands through the practice of goodwill. So my goodwill challenge to you this week is to wake up every morning and think, well, today I'm going to benefit whoever I see. Before you go into a meeting, think, may I be of benefit to the people in this meeting? Before you go to the store, you can think, may I benefit everyone who serves me, whether the service is good or bad. May I be of benefit to everyone who hears about me or knows about me or sees me or whatever. It's sure helpful, because sometimes we feel a little self-conscious when we think people are looking at us. Instead of saying, hey, what are you looking at? We could actually think to ourselves, may you be benefited. May you be benefited by whatever it is that I have to give you. And so that's what I wanted to talk about today. I wanted to talk about goodwill. And I wanted to talk about how maintaining a mind of goodwill can actually prevent negative actions. Because if we're wishing goodwill toward others, we won't lie to them. We won't hurt them. We won't abuse them in any way. And if we're thinking good thoughts toward ourselves, we also won't harm or abuse ourselves either. And we will find ways to take care of the, I guess you could say, the precious opportunity for Buddhahood that we have. So I'm going to take a moment and take a look at the chat to see if anybody has any questions. And you can talk, you can ask questions about this talk, or you can ask questions about anything. And then after we've had a chance to discuss, then I have a little bit of news to bring you up to date on regarding the Columbus KTC and the new building. But let's see first if there are any chat items. Yes, and hey, thanks to my technical team for letting me know that I was keying the mic. So thanks very much on that. We got that solved. Oh, it's just great to see everyone. Look at all the people saying hi. Oh, that's lovely. Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it. Somebody asked me if I was a mind reader, and I said, no, I can say, no, I am not a mind reader, and I don't even play one on TV. But what it is that the Buddha's teachings are so much about our humanness. And I think human beings, I mean, we may think we're mysterious because nobody can read our thoughts except a Buddha. But the fact of the matter is, we all do a lot of the same things. And the Buddha knew about this. So, I mean, why else do you think he gave us the 10 virtuous actions and the 10 non-virtuous actions? You know, the 10 non-virtuous ones to avoid and the 10 virtuous ones to do instead. And I think it's because his enlightenment was so deep, so profound, and so vast that he could talk about human nature in a way that could be related to by anyone. And so even just repeating the teachings might make us seem like we're all-knowing, but actually in some ways, I may just speak for myself, even though they gave me the title of Lama when I got out of retreat, I'm just still me, and I'm still confused, and I'm not enlightened. But what's interesting is that sometimes when we give Dharma talks, we're actually talking to ourselves. That may be a secret. Maybe I shouldn't reveal that, but we're often just talking to ourselves. Let's see what else folks are talking about today. I think I practice regret too much. Boy, I tell you what, that's also a human thing. It's a very human thing. So yeah, I can completely relate to that. Somebody asked Kempo Kartha Rinpoche about that one time. They said, the person was saying something very much like what you're saying here, which is that a person feels outsized, bigger than usual, and maybe bigger than healthy, regret and even shame about things. And the person asked Kempo Rinpoche the question this way. They said, what do we do about excessive guilt and shame? And Rinpoche, his answer was really, again, very insightful. He said, well, you know, a certain amount of guilt is good, he said, because it helps prevent us from doing negative things again. He said, however, he said, it can become excessive. And he said, his definition for excessive guilt and shame was, he said, taking more than your fair share of responsibility for something that happened. It's taking more than your share, your fair share of guilt and responsibility for something that happened. And he said, it's really important that we look at this and that we see when we have taken too much. And I think that one of the ways, he didn't say this, but I think one of the ways we can tell when we've taken more than our fair share of responsibility for something that happened is when it sort of occupies our mind day and night, and when it just won't let us go. And I think at that point, we have to recognize that that is another kind of self-clinging. This is not what Rinpoche said, but this is kind of how I take it, that excessive guilt and shame is an inverted kind of self-fixation, you know, because sometimes self-fixation manifests as people saying, oh, I'm the best, I'm better than other people. But sometimes it's we think I am the best at being the worst. When we find ourselves doing this and building case against ourselves and being overly punitive toward ourselves, this is when we actually have to stop, take a time out, stop, and take that one step back. And I talked about this a few weeks ago when I did the talk on taking a step back, which is something that meditation allows us to do. It allows us to notice when we're thinking something. It allows us to notice when we're going down a road that is negative for us. And it helps us to take time out, stop, and then engage in a counteractive remedy. For example, if you find that you have taken more than your share of responsibility for something that's happened, one of the things you can do is the practice of compassion meditation, or Tonglen, sending and receiving, with yourself in mind. You can breathe out and give goodness and healing to yourself, and breathe in and remove the shame. Breathe out and give goodness and healing to yourself. Breathe in and remove the shame. You only need to do this. I'm looking for my mala. You only need to do this a little bit. 10 cycles of in and out breath, 15 maybe. You know, it doesn't. The idea is that we have to practice something that counteracts the negative thoughts that we're having. And if we're feeling too much regret, one of the things we can do is do Tonglen for ourselves, but then do Tonglen for other people who are just like us, and then finally do Tonglen for everybody. And then again, that's where we recognize our humanness. So I think that, I hope that helps with the questioner who was asking about the, I just realized I can put the questions on here. Okay. I'll remember that. Here's another question. I only realized I got in a heated conversation or getting angry after it happened. What to practice to become better to catch it before it happens? Boy, I can really relate to that. I think that there's any form of, my understanding is that part of why we don't notice it is because we have a habit of reacting in anger. And anger is like always served us before. It's always helped us feel powerful in a powerless situation and so forth and so on. So we can kind of understand why we reach for that weapon of anger in situations. We can understand why we do it, but we can also say, you know, there's got to be a better way. And so what I would recommend is several different things. Anything that helps with shamatha. Shamatha means calm abiding. It's the breath awareness meditation. So if you do at least a little bit of breath awareness meditation every day, and if you don't have a lot of time, just count off a quarter of the beads on your set of beads or a half a set of beads, in and out breath, move a bead, in and out breath, move a bead. And maybe you'll get 5 minutes, 10 minutes of meditation, maybe even 15 from that. And just do that every day. Just do it every day. And if you can't do that every day, try instead to recite the mantra, the compassion mantra, Om Mani Padme Hung. Om Mani Padme Hung. Try to do that. Let's see if I can put that in chat. Om Mani Padme Hung. Mantra, Om Mani Padme Hung. Om refers to the enlightened body of the Buddha, and Hung refers to the enlightened mind of the Buddha, and Mani means jewel, Padme means lotus, and it's a way of saying the name of Chenrezig, the Bodhisattva of compassion. And so by saying this mantra, you're invoking the spirit of compassion that is within you. And you're also invoking the blessing of Chenrezig. So if shamatha meditation just is not something you're good at, then recite this mantra. And I would do it out loud. Om Mani Padme Hung. And Om Mani Padme Hung. Om Mani Padme Hung. And try to keep your mind with the mantra. Om Mani Padme Hung. Om Mani Padme Hung. And at the conclusion of the mantra, you can dedicate that mantra to your overcoming of this particular pattern. Kempo Rinpoche said, we have to understand that when we have a strong habit, it's going to take a long time to fix it. So he said, give yourself some time and space. Don't be overly harsh with yourself. Realize that you're going to make mistakes every day and be compassionate with yourself, but do your best to continue to work on every evening, looking at your actions, regretting the negative ones and rejoicing in the good ones. And so I think that those three things, increasing our shamatha practice, whether it's through mantra recitation or breath awareness, or compassion meditation, the Tonglen practice, where you, as you breathe out, you think you're giving goodness to others. And as you breathe in, you think that you're removing suffering from yourself and from others. And do that practice a little bit every day, just, you know, 21 breaths or whatever. Do a little bit of practice every day. And then what you'll find is over a period of days, weeks, months, and years, there will be a slowing down of the thought processes so that you will catch it sooner. At first, you'll be 5 minutes into a tirade before you even realize that you're angry. And so the next time, if you do these practices, it might be 4 minutes, and then it might be 3 minutes into a tirade, then it might be 2 minutes. And then after a while, with mild irritation, you may begin to notice the irritation right before it comes out of your mouth. And then you can take some action to feel compassion for yourself and others and just zip it. It's something to keep in mind. So I really, really appreciate this question. Just really, really appreciate this question because I think there's no way to catch it before it happens at first, but over time you might be able to catch these mental afflictions before they pop out of your mouth. So thank you for that question. And by the way, check back with me and let me know how that's going. You can write to me at LamaKathy@ColumbusKTC.org. Again, Lama, K-A-T-H-Y, at ColumbusKTC.org. And let me know how it's working for you, and I'll help out. Here's another really good question. Let's see if I can. Here's another good question. I feel annoyance when I hear my coworkers gossiping and backbiting. Boy, can I relate. I used to work in a newspaper, and the hot take was like gold. Everybody wanted to have a hot take or criticize people, or it was painful. And at first, I'll tell you what I did. At first, I would try to say things like, oh man, you're just grousing about the boss and we're trying to have lunch and we didn't invite the boss to lunch, but you did. So could you like leave the boss out in the hallway, you know, things like that. But the other thing you can do is silently imagine that the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas are dissolving into the people who are gossiping and backbiting. And even though you can't fix their gossiping and their backbiting, you can't fix that. You can make the aspiration that the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas will slowly impact their mind. And if I remember correctly, you work in a medical environment. So you can imagine the medicine Buddha, that beautiful blue Buddha of medicine, dissolving into them and giving them a blessing. And I think the only other thing I can say about this is that when you feel your own annoyance, that you are getting annoyed, one of the things you can do is Kempo Kartha Rinpoche, in his article, he gave a talk once that we put on LamaKathy.net as the article, Tonglen in Everyday Life. He said, when you feel a mental affliction, whether it's anger or annoyance or whatever, he said, you can mentally take on the negativity of others and say, may my annoyance contain the annoyance of all sentient beings. And by my working through this moment of being annoyed, may I and all beings be free of annoyance, and may we become Buddhas in the future, which is the complete freedom from this. And this also will help the person who is talking about feeling excess regret. Kempo Rinpoche said, sometimes when we make mistakes, we give ourselves a hard time. And he said, this is not really helpful. And he said, what you could do is you could say to yourself, yes, I made a mistake. All human beings make mistakes. May all of the mistakes of all human beings be contained in this mistake I have made. And by my working through this moment of disappointment, may I and all beings be free from these kinds of mistakes in the future. So I really feel for both of these situations. And yeah, I know I get annoyed when people are backbiting. I would just like to say, like, you know, is it worth your peace of mind? You know, let's see. Okay. I think that's it. One person is saying about Tonglen, T-O-N-G-L-E-N. Tonglen means, Tong means to send, and Len means to take. And this is something, yes, that we can do for ourselves when we're feeling a little bit overwhelmed. We can breathe out goodness to ourselves and breathe in and remove our own negativity. And then after we've done that, we can do it for all people who feel like us. And then finally, for all sentient beings. So somebody's saying, I have relatives who gossip like it's a sport. Yeah, I know. I don't want to take, you don't want to take part in that. And I can understand that. And you can always imagine the Buddha's dissolving into all the gossiping relatives and just make the aspiration that they come up with some new ways of being themselves. Yeah, I know. It's just like, you know, there's this old Buddhist story about two monks that were taking a journey in the countryside, and they went past a river, and they had to ford this river. And there was a woman standing on the side, and she was afraid to ford the river by herself. So one of the monks picked her up and carried her, and then dropped her off at the other side of the river. And of course, in that particular order of monastics and in Buddhist monastics in general, for men to touch women was not allowed. And so this other monk was resenting the fact that his brother monk had touched a woman. And he finally said, you know, I'm really bothered by this. Why did you do that? And the fellow who had done the carrying of the woman said, look, I put her down hours ago. Why won't you let her down? So, I mean, I wish there's some nice way to be able to say that to people, like, you know, it's like, but I haven't figured it out totally yet. So we may have to have a support group meeting on that one for the future. I'm sorry to say, but we all have these things that we need to work on. And even if all we do is catch one negative thought a day or make one positive aspiration a day, generating that feeling of goodwill. That's why I'm saying your homework for this week is to try to wake up and generate a thought of goodwill before you get out of bed. You don't even have to like go in front of your shrine and bow and do all of that. You can just say, may everything I do today benefit beings in some way. That means even if you make mistakes, may they be of benefit to others. That's always a help. So we have to stop now. I see the time is, we're running out of time. But I can't thank you enough for your questions today. These have been excellent. And thanks to everyone who's said hello and all of that. It's just really lovely. My hope is that this is a helpful topic for you, and a reminder that even one little good thought is going to help you. Just this past week, I was talking to someone, and it reminded me of something that His Eminence Taisi Trimbache said to us, a group of us who had gone there to India to see him and to receive instruction from him. He said, many people worry about whether in their future lives they will be able to, they will have to start all over learning Dharma again. And he said, I am happy to tell you that you will not have to start at the beginning and learn Dharma all over again. He said, well, yes, of course, in your next life, if you are reborn as a human being in Dharma places, that yes, you will have to study the Dharma. And he said, but it'll come to you a lot more quickly. He said, you get to keep every good thing you've done, and you get to keep everything you've learned. So I think that's, to me, that was a real hopeful sign. So So in any case, let's stop here and let's say a prayer of dedication. We dedicate the merit of this session and all of the merit and goodness we've accumulated in the past and will accumulate in the future and are accumulating now. We dedicate it all to the liberation of all sentient beings from all forms of suffering. I'll recite the short prayer in English. Through this merit, may all achieve the omniscience of Buddhahood. May it defeat our common enemy, wrongdoing, from the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death, from the ocean of samsara. May we free all beings. May we free all beings. May we free all beings. Thanks, everyone. And I think as it happens, as I look at my calendar, I was going to give you an update on Columbus KTC. Things and it doesn't look like I'm going to have time now, but I will give you an update next week because it looks like I'm giving the Dharma talk again next week, and it will be on sacred spaces. So that'll be a really good opportunity. But the short news is that we're hoping for city inspections soon, And then we'll have more good news about a future time for opening the new center. So just stay tuned and keep the prayers coming. We need them. Okay, Omane Pemehon, may all beings benefit, and we'll see you again soon.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.